Anya felt her grip slipping, but as she dangled from the bra strap, which was attached to the belt she'd pulled off, she waited until the Lycra spandex blend stretched out to its full length. She glanced down and saw she was still more than 20 feet above the floor. She wasn't going to get any closer. And she wasn't at all sure her makeshift rope would stay anchored to the metal she'd attached it to.
It's now or never. Here goes nothing.
Anya let go. She hit the floor and rolled. Exhausted, she slowly got to her feet. Then she walked to the wall nearby and pressed. It gave a little, but it was locked. Anya ran her hand over the edges until she found the small space.
There. The lock.
Anya drew out her sword and stabbed it through the opening. There was the briefest resistance, and then the lock broke off and the hidden door swung open. Anya was out of the maze. Green and Jonas reached the entry point to the slide. Green looked in and then ducked back.
So what, we put Kessel in and let him maneuver his way down? How's that going to work?
If it's a stupid idea, then so be it. We didn't come up with it, who cares?
We put Kessel on that slide. All he's going to do is slide down and crash into Anya. It's a waste of an asset.
So call him.
Green reached into his pocket and pulled out the walkie-talkie.
Fairclough, this is Green.
What is it?
We're at the entry point, but you want us to put Kessel on the slide? We don't know if that's such a good idea.
Is that what I told you to do? No! I told you to position Kessel by the entry point, and then when Anya managed to climb up there, he could kill her! I never said anything about putting Kessel on the slide! That wouldn't make any sense at all, now would it?
No, it wouldn't.
Oh, I'm so glad we agree! Now leave Kessel there and come back to the control room! I have something else for you to do.
I'm feeling less and less like an equal partner in this thing.
He's certainly not treating us like equals.
No, he's not. It might be time to rectify that situation.
Anya worked her way down the corridor. Unlike those in the maze, this one was finished and had dim lights every few feet running along the upper part of the walls. Here and there, she could see light fixtures that she supposed concealed hidden access points to the maze. The longer she walked, the more impressed she was with the depth and scale of Fairclough's operation. Fairclough had obviously planned this whole layout very carefully. Arrows pointed to coded room numbers, and one large red arrow said CR in front of it, which Anya assumed meant control room. There were speakers and monitors at various points along the way, but in these corridors there didn't seem to be much surveillance. All she had to do was keep working toward Fairclough, and the handy red arrows gave her the ability to do just that. If she could keep quiet and stay out of the way of video cameras, there was no reason to think she couldn't get him and stop him. Anya kept moving.
He'll be plenty surprised when we show up with Kessel.
But what's the plan? You're just gonna storm in there and demand he treat us like partners? He's too consumed right now with the idea of killing Anya. You really think he's gonna be open to discussion?
If he's not, then I'll have Kessel deal with him.
You can't kill him yet. We don't have his money. We kill him now, and we'll be flat broke. I don't know about you, but I didn't like that lifestyle all that much.
I'm not going to kill him yet. All I want is to show Fairclough that we have Kessel under our control, not his. And if I need Kessel to lean on the old man to bring him around to our way of thinking, then I'll do it. A few broken bones shouldn't keep Fairclough from being able to adjust his will so that we benefit, you know?
All right.
You're on board with this, right?
Why wouldn't I be?
Just checking. I'd hate to lose your friendship over this. That would be a shame.
Green turned up the corridor with Kessel. Behind him, Jonas frowned. He didn't like the way Green had said that. And as they walked, Jonas pulled out a small transmitter, made a few adjustments, and then put it back in his pocket. Anya approached an intersection. She slowed and squatted in the shadows nearby. She was dangerously close to dehydrating. Her tongue felt thick and mossy. She'd also stopped sweating, and she had a vague sense of nausea. She needed water, and soon. Otherwise, she wasn't going to be much good to anyone, let alone herself. She glanced up and down the corridor, and then spotted a small door with a graphic on it. A toilet. A bathroom meant water. Taking another quick glance up and down the hallway, she checked for any surveillance cameras, but saw nothing unusual. That didn't mean they weren't there. Fairclough had hidden them well in the maze. But she had to take the chance. She needed water desperately. She rose and quickly crossed the hall to the bathroom. She turned the doorknob and went inside.
What is taking those two so long?
Fairclough checked numerous camera angles before he finally found them down one of the hallways, with Castle.
Those idiots.
He leaned closer and saw that Green and Jonas were both engaged in an animated discussion. Fairclough quickly pulled up the videotape of that particular hallway and wound it back to try to understand what had triggered them to leave the ambush. Something caught his eye, and he stopped the tape and hit play. Interesting. The doctor, Jonas, pulled out a transmitter behind Green's back and pushed several buttons on it. A code? He rewound the footage and zoomed in, watching Jonas punch the number in several times until Fairclough had committed the code to memory. But Fairclough had contingency plans in place. And after watching Green and Jonas talk among themselves, Fairclough decided it was time to put one of those plans into motion.
Kazumi-san, are you there?
I am here.
Would you return to the control room as soon as possible? I need you here, I think.
Is there a problem?
Not yet, but there may be one shortly. And I think it would be best if you were here to deal with it.
Anya ran the faucet slowly so the rush of water couldn't be heard outside the bathroom. Then she ducked her head under the stream. She gulped down water until she couldn't stand it any longer. Already she could feel her body responding to the water. Her limbs felt more pliable. She felt less sluggish. And the nausea was gone, too. While dehydration could take you down quickly, rehydrating also took surprisingly little time. Anya continued to swallow more water as she raced to put herself back in fighting shape.
Maybe 20 minutes to get my fluid levels back up and be ready for whatever Fairclough wants to throw at me.
Green, Jonas, and Kessel all trudged down the corridor. As they passed the bathroom, Jonas stopped Green.
I need to take a leak.
You're joking, right?
I haven't gone in a long time. My bladder's about to burst.
Man, tie a knot in it, okay? What the hell? We've got to take this to Fairclough right now before he gets wind of what we're up to. There's no time to take a bathroom break.
Ugh, I'm not gonna be comfortable.
Screw comfort. We're going to the control room now. Pee your pants for all I care, but we have to settle this thing.
Fine. Whatever.
They kept moving. On the other side of the door, her ear pressed against it, Anya waited until she couldn't hear anything else.
Whew.
She'd caught the sound of footsteps and pulled the sword out. She would have been ready if Jonas had come through the door. With the three men in front of her, they'd lead her straight to the control room. Anya crept out of the bathroom just in time to see Green, Jonas, and Kessel disappear around a corner. She followed. Behind her, Anya never noticed the shadow detach itself from the wall and follow her. It, too, was headed for the control room. And the impending storm. Anya watched as Green led Kessel and Jonas into the control room. From her position by the corner, she could see everything clearly.
You realize, of course, that you're going to ruin my plans if you insist on this silliness.
The fact of the matter, Reggie, is that you've been treating us like servants. Do this, do that. We came into this with an understanding, as equals.
Did you now? Is that what you thought it was? That the power share was 50-50? How intriguing. You see, from my perspective, I recruited you to help me put something into motion. The power structure was fairly clear from my vantage point. I am in command of this project. Not you, not him, not anyone. Your organization was little more than a band of ruffians who threw their lot in with you because you have a certain degree of charisma and a violent streak that's apparently so appealing to today's youth. That's about it.
You're underestimating us. The FBI thought enough of what we'd done to put one of their guys undercover with us to take us down. Here's the proof.
So what? So the government decided to put someone undercover in your little club. Big deal. Hardly worth their time, if you ask me. But then again, why should that be surprising? The government can't find its own ass without a roadmap, a GPS, and a congressional oversight hearing. You got lucky.
This is exactly what we're talking about. You minimize our contributions to this project and everything we've done, and frankly, I'm tired of your bullshit.
Are you? And just what would you propose to do about it? Divorce me? Maybe force me to give you money so you can continue your charade elsewhere? Is that it?
The thought had occurred to me.
Well, it's a wonder something did, given all the other junk you've got rattling through that tiny brain of yours. However, you should both know that it's not easy to get at my money. As I've aged, you see, I've known I might prove a tempting target for someone intent on stealing what I've worked hard to attain.
Yeah, right. Inheriting your money is such a tough struggle to go through, please.
Regardless of how you think I acquired my wealth, there's little chance of you ever getting it. Unless I decide you've proven yourselves worthy.
And what the hell does that mean?
It means, if you keep playing along with my project here, you just might be on the receiving end of some of that money. But you won't see a cent otherwise.
Behind Anya, a shadow shifted, and Kozumi peered out from his hiding spot. Noiselessly, he rose from the shadow that had concealed him. Anya shifted and instinctively rolled, coming to her feet, her sword out in front of her. She leaned back out of range of the katana. Anya parried the next strike. She dropped and cut at his legs. He leaped into the air and came down some distance away. Both of them took the second to catch their breath. Anya ducked the strike, then came up and kicked the Asian in the knee. The Asian limped backward as Anya pressed him. The force of her charge drove the man back more and more until he hit the wall. He twisted out of range and brought his katana up. Anya fainted to one side. Anya rose as he fell, his katana sliding from his grasp toward the blood-slick floor. Anya turned as Kessel came lumbering out of the control room, reaching for Anya as if to embrace her. Anya put her sword away. If it was in her hands, she might be tempted to use it. Without it, she'd have to rely on speed and agility to outwit Kessel. He suddenly launched a roundhouse kick at Anya's right side. She jumped away. Kessel circled her like a shark, but his eyes were still vacant. Anya caught glimpses of the red light at the base of his skull. He fainted and came down on her with a lunging punch that Anya just barely avoided. She drove an elbow into his midsection as he went past her. Anya moved around Kessel, and he mirrored her perfectly. Then he came at her again. Anya evaded his kick, but took most of a left hook to her side. Still, the punch hurt, and Anya drew herself back and away.
If I can get him into a hold, maybe I can rip that antenna off. But what if it kills him? I'll have to take the chance. He's not gonna stop till I'm dead.
He's remarkably agile for someone not under his own control. That was quite a hit.
The technology uses the person's own skill to their advantage.
And how did you come up with this?
I had plenty of time to experiment when I was working in Southeast Asia. Lots of patients, too. All I had to do was convince them that they needed brain surgery, and they were more than eager to participate.
Remarkable.
Behind him, Fairclough was eyeing a drawer across the room. Inside there, he knew he'd find a pistol with a full clip ready to fire. Something told him he was going to need it to convince Green that his personal plans were insignificant compared to Fairclough's. Anya backpedaled away from Kessel as he advanced on her again. She stared into his eyes and thought she saw something there, some sort of glimmer of the man he used to be.
Is he trying to fight the commands?
But just as she thought she might have a chance to get through to him, Kessel's eyes clouded. He threw a series of punches at Anya, backing her up toward where Kozumi's body lay in a widening pool of blood. Kessel slipped in the blood. Anya jumped over him as he skidded. But Kessel got to his feet quickly. He rushed at Anya, and she was forced to duck away. Kessel dropped an elbow on her back, slamming her into the floor. She rolled and came to her feet. Anya circled Kessel. He watched her through squinted eyes. Was he still trying to regain control of himself? But despite the presence of Anya's sword, he drove in and swung at her. Anya used the flat of her blade to smack Kessel in the face. The force broke his nose and blood poured out. Anya saw his vision cloud. She evaded another one of his kicks.
I can't keep this up. He's too strong for me, and I can't break through to him. I can't do anything.
Anya steeled herself for what she had to do. In the control room, Fairclough was beaming as he watched the monitor.
Ah, this is it. This is the moment that will ruin her. The moment where she has to kill a friend to save herself. Fantastic!
You're already celebrating? Don't you think that's premature?
No. I know her limits. She's been taken to them and beyond through the course of the maze. There are lines even she has to cross. Things even she has to do. I finally destroyed her.
Well, then, I suppose this is the proudest moment of your life?
Not even close. Once this is done, we'll all sit down and discuss my plans for the future and what your roles will be. And I can assure you, it will blow your mind.
Anya waited until she felt Kessel was committing himself to an attack. And then he came at her harder than he ever had so far. She backed up, circled, and dove twice out of the way. But with each attack, he grew closer to landing the decisive strike that would finish her. Anya dove a final time and came up, her sword in front of her.
I'm so sorry, Kessel.
He launched himself at her in a flying tackle. She leaped over him. Her sword sliced the antenna off the back of Kessel's skull. Then the red light went dark. Anya ran to Kessel and cautiously rolled him over.
Kessel?
His eyes blinked and then opened. There was something there.
Anya.
I'm here. Oh, God. I'm so sorry I had to do it. I tried to avoid it, but...
You did the right thing. Thank you.
Then his eyes closed.
Oh.
Anya Creed sat in the blood-slick hallway, cradling Kessel's head in her lap as Green and Jonas approached. Green, despite himself, felt a twinge of compassion for her. With Jonas's help, he got her to her feet. She didn't fight them. She now seemed as vacant as Kessel had been when Jonas got done tinkering with his brain. Without a word, Anya let them lead her to the control room. Behind them, the body of Kessel lay still.
Ah, I'm pleased to see you again at last, Anya.
If she showed any sign of hearing him, it wasn't evident. Green and Jonas stood on either side of her, ready to tackle her if she exploded into action. But Anya's body was slumped forward.
I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
I don't really care what you have to say. You've finished what you meant to accomplish. Congratulations.
You think this is finished? Oh, I'm not done with you.
I don't care what you do to me.
Good. Then you won't mind if I have Jonas over there take you into the examination room and perform a similar operation on you as we did to your friend Kessel, would you?
No.
Excellent. Jonas, can you be ready to perform the operation, say, in about 10 minutes?
I wasn't aware I'd be doing two operations. I'm really not outfitted for it.
I took the liberty of making sure we had enough supplies on hand. You'll find everything you need in the examination room.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. I'll have Green bring her down in a few minutes.
Okay.
What would you like me to do?
A simple task, really. One well within your abilities and suited to your particular talents. All I need you to do, Mr. Green, is die.
What?
Anya, standing beside Green, didn't even wince.
Well done, Mr. Green. Ha! Well, that's a relief. Don't you think, Anya?
It's whatever you think it is.
Maybe I don't even need Jonas to perform that operation on you, do I? Let's go and see him, shall we?
Anya stared straight ahead with a blank expression.
Anya, can you hear me?
Yes.
I want you to come with me. Do you understand? It's time you were seen by the doctor.
All right.
Follow me.
Fairclough walked out of the control room, and Anya followed him. He eyed Kessel's body as he passed it. The transmitter had indeed been broken. He could see where the antenna lay in the coagulated blood. Beyond Kessel was the body of Kozumi.
Oh, a shame she was able to kill you. But I thank you for your service.
Fairclough would have to make arrangements for the man's body to be shipped back to Japan, of course. It was the least he could do for the loyalty he'd shown. And he'd also send some money back to Kozumi's family. Kozumi had known the risks associated with his profession, of course, but that didn't mean his family had. A severance package was the only proper thing to do.
Ah, well. Come along, Anya.
Fairclough continued toward the medical facilities, Anya following obediently a few paces behind him. They turned a corner and disappeared. But in their wake, Kessel stirred. He groggily lifted himself off the floor and stretched to his full height. Looking around at the scene, he quickly surmised what had happened. And then, with a more normal gait, he took off down the corridor after Anya and Fairclough.
Are you still with me, Anya? Still feeling all melancholy?
Anya looked through him. He didn't matter anymore. She'd stopped caring about him.
What?
I asked if you were still melancholy.
I'm not really sure. What I do know is that you don't matter all that much to me any longer.
And what the hell is that supposed to mean? I'm in control of this situation.
Okay. You're in control. Congratulations. I don't really care.
Well, you ought to care. I've been hunting you for years now.
Yeah, well, I probably did something that hurt you a lot. And for that, I'm sorry. But it doesn't mean I don't deserve whatever it is you're about to do.
You what? What the hell is the matter with you, woman? You ought to be cowering in fear of what I'm about to do to you. You killed my brother and ruined the only family I had.
I killed your brother?
Yes.
I'm sorry for your loss. Truly, I am. I realize that I can't bring him back, but I feel bad that you suffered that loss by my hand.
Where is your sword now?
Where it goes when I don't have it out.
In that case, I want you to give it to me.
I don't think it's possible for me to give the sword to someone else. I tried earlier in your maze. As soon as I handed it to Kessel, the sword vanished.
Did you really want to be rid of it then?
Well, no, I guess not. I thought I might need it to fight my way out of your maze.
And what about now? Do you still want it so badly?
I don't want it at all. I've given my life to the service of it, and it failed to protect a person I cared about. So what's the use any longer?
Perhaps it would be better if you did let it go. You might even get your life back, eh?
Yeah, maybe.
Then do it, Anya. If you no longer want it, give it to me now. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would.
Then give me your sword.
Behind them, further down the corridor, Kessel crouched near the wall. He'd overheard the conversation and his mind was racing.
What happened to me? And why is Anya just letting herself be led around by Fairclough like this?
Kessel had already seen the two bodies near the control room. Green was dead, that was good news, and the Asian man had been disemboweled, presumably by Anya's sword. The last thing Kessel could remember was Jonas standing behind him when he'd been strapped into the dentist's chair. And then he winced as the memories of the agony came flooding back.
I'll tend to you later, Jonas.
But right now, he had to help Anya. She didn't seem to understand what Fairclough was asking her to do. Hand over her sword?
She wasn't able to give it to me. But if Fairclough got it...
Kessel didn't even want to consider the consequences of that action. He had to stop Anya from giving it to him.
If you give me your sword, I promise that I will forgive you, Anya. I'll forgive you for killing my brother and destroying my family.
You will?
You have my word of honor on it. Despite what you may think of me, I am a man of honor. And if I give you my word, then you don't need to question it.
Anya bowed her head. She saw the sword in the otherwhere and reached for it.
Oh, it's incredible. And it's really the sword that once belonged to Joan of Arc?
As far as I know, yes. She was obviously an incredible warrior. Far better than I'll ever be.
Then, are you ready to give up the sword, Anya? Are you truly ready?
Yes, I am.
Then do it!
As Kessel watched in disbelief, Anya held her sword up and closed her eyes. Then she lowered the sword in front of her face, turned it around, and handed it over hilt first to Fairclough. He wrapped his hands around it. Kessel winced, expecting the sword to vanish as it had when Anya had tried to give it to him. Except the sword didn't disappear. Fairclough stood in the hallway, holding Anya's blade.
My God, she's done it.
Fairclough stood still, not even daring to draw a breath. His eyes gleamed with excitement. Anya stood there watching him intently, but there was no regret on her face, none whatsoever. If anything, she looked relieved.
Are you happy now?
I am. And I meant what I said. I have forgiven you, Anya.
Thank you.
No, thank you. You don't know how long I've waited for this moment. I'm quite amazed that I stand before you now, holding your very sword.
Use it in good spirit and conscience. It deserves to be used well.
Are you telling me how to use what is mine?
I'm telling you the sword is yours, and I hope that it's put to good use. That's all.
Of course you are. Let's go.
Where?
To the doctor's office, of course. He's expecting us.
I thought you'd told me that you'd forgive me if I gave you the sword. But you're still gonna make him do that thing?
Don't be upset, my dear. I did forgive you, but that doesn't mean your crime should go unpunished.
Jonas had settled in well. He'd moved the chair into position and was dressed in scrubs with a mask over his face.
Where's Green?
Fairclough shot him.
What?
It gets worse. He's got my sword now.
Fairclough stepped out from behind Anya and held the sword aloft.
Ha! What do you think, Jonas? Rather a compelling picture, isn't it? And no offense, Anya, but I rather think the sword looks better in my hands than it ever did in yours.
How could you kill Green? We had an agreement. We were supposed to be partners.
You know, Doctor, Green really ought to have been more careful about voicing his concerns. He knew I had this place wired for video and sound, and yet he felt safe to talk about betraying me. I know you both had that conversation.
Hey, I never agreed. I only went along because Green was mentally unstable.
Yeah. And you're a beacon of rational thought, huh?
Seriously, Fairclough, I never intended to stab you in the back. I even made some adjustments to Kessel in case Green got carried away and suspected me of not backing him.
And that is why you are still alive, my good doctor. I saw the adjustments you made to Kessel. Not that it helped all that much, since Anya still killed him. But I appreciate your professed loyalty.
Well, it's just that you've been good to us. What, with the money and resources and stuff like that?
It's nice to be appreciated.
I'm still ready to play for your team.
I know, which is why I need you to go ahead and carry out your brain control operation on Anya here, and I need it done immediately.
You bet. I'll get an IV line into her so I can anesthetize her and get started.
No anesthesia.
Are you kidding? The pain almost killed Kessel. It'll probably kill her.
And that would be tragic, but she gets no anesthesia. I want her awake and able to feel every bit of the agony as you destroy her brain and turn her into my slave.
Jonas strapped Anya into the chair, tightening the wrist straps as much as he could without cutting off her circulation. He glanced at her.
Sorry I have to tie these so tight, but I'm afraid the pain is going to make you struggle. And I can't afford to have you do that, or else I might accidentally turn you into a vegetable.
Yeah, that would be the last thing we'd want to happen, wouldn't it?
This isn't my fault. I'm just doing as ordered.
You can always stop what you're doing and choose to take a stand for what's right. It's not rocket science. Problem is, people are lazy and it's easier not to care. It's easier not to rock the boat or risk conflict.
Hey, you gave up your sword. What does that say about you and your so-called fight for the powers of good?
The problem with being lazy is that sooner or later, if you've never stood up for anyone else, when evil comes knocking on your door, no one will be there to have your back, and you'll get squashed.
Lady, I only want to stay alive.
What sort of life is it when you spend it hiding in fear and insecurity? Better to be dead having taken a stand for what's right than laid down for evil.
Hypocrisy. She's ready.
In that case, begin.
Jonas turned to his tray of instruments. Kessel launched himself through the doorway. To Jonas, and together they crashed back into the tray of surgical implements. The two men struggled on the floor, but Kessel easily won out. He straddled Jonas's chest.
It's payback time, doctor.
Jonas brought up his hands to ward off the attacks, but Kessel was too strong and too committed. He saw a scalpel out of the corner of his eye lying on the floor. With one hand holding Jonas down, Kessel reached for it. Then he brought it up over Jonas's right eyeball.
I'm going to cut you into very, very small pieces now, doctor.
Jonas waved his head from side to side. Kessel punched him in the jaw, and Jonas relaxed. Kessel leaned over him and brought the scalpel down toward one unfocused, rolling eyeball.
Stop!
Kessel jerked around. Fairclough held the sword, Anya's sword, high over Anya's head. Kessel froze.
That's right. You even blink and I'll chop her head right off. Throw the scalpel away.
Kessel eyed the surgical tool and then tossed it across the room.
There. See? That wasn't so difficult. There's no reason we can't all get along with one another.
I'm gonna kill you, right after I finish dealing with Dr. Mengele here.
You'll do no such thing. If you even move, I'll kill the woman.
Do it. You're better off just killing me now and getting it over with.
You know what? I think you just might be right, Anya.
Fairclough raised the sword and brought it down toward Anya's head. The sword vanished. Anya sat in the chair, unharmed.
No!
Kessel hadn't noticed that Jonas had revived enough to grab another scalpel. Kessel evaded the strike. He drove an elbow into Jonas's sternum, exploding his heart. Jonas jerked once, and a small bubble of blood popped out of his mouth and dribbled down the side of his face. Kessel grabbed Jonas's head and jerked it to the side.
Just to be sure.
He climbed off Jonas and looked at Anya, who was still sitting very calmly in the chair.
Oh, it took you long enough to get here.
You knew I was alive?
I could tell you were still breathing, but it was shallow. I have to admit I was concerned that maybe I'd made a mistake.
Kessel looked around.
Fairclough's gone. I think he's probably going to be running for some time to come. You mind getting me out of here?
Kessel fidgeted with the cuffs until they came loose. Anya stepped out of the chair and hugged him close.
Thank you for coming for me.
As if you wouldn't have done the same thing for me. Hell, you did do the same thing for me.
I might have killed you.
But you didn't.
So we're even now? No debts, no bizarre obligations that I'll have to collect on or give up?
We're cool.
Anya looked over his shoulder at Jonas's corpse lying on the ground.
I might have gone a little overboard with him.
I don't think anyone would call it unjustified, given what you went through.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to make sure there was no way you could rise from the dead, you know?
Unlike you.
Resurrection's a bitch. What can I say?
We should leave. I don't think we can do any more down here, and frankly, I'd like to see the sun.
Hang on a second.
What is it?
How come you gave him the sword? I mean, earlier you tried to give it to me and it didn't work. So how come you gave it to him freely like that? You looked shattered. I really thought you were gone.
The fact that I couldn't give you the sword earlier in the maze was actually what helped me defeat Fairclough. I had to do something completely unexpected in order to have any hope of getting out of this place.
Sorry. Maybe it's because I literally have holes in my head, but I don't follow your line of reasoning.
This maze, every aspect of it, was designed to take advantage of our actions and our human nature. Fairclough knew that if we were faced with certain obstacles and challenges, we'd respond predictably. He was able to dictate every step we took, and as our frustration mounted, we would be depressed, tired, and on the verge of giving up.
Yeah, I was close to that point several times.
Exactly. And that's what he wanted. Not so much from you, but he wanted to break me. Only then would he be able to get what he really wanted.
You?
I was prize B. What Fairclough really wanted was the sword.
How do you know?
I wasn't sure until I offered it to him. Or rather, I let him lead the conversation where the offer would come up.
You manipulated him, in other words.
It was the only way I could turn the tables on him. Starting back in the maze, I had to do something that went against everything Fairclough had set up. So I climbed that impossible Teflon-coated slide. Fairclough never expected that. He never thought someone would even attempt it, so that was his weak point.
But then...
When I had to fight you, I could see that they'd done something to you, that you weren't under your own control. A red light kept blinking at the base of your skull.
Okay, so you took me down and severed the connection. Weren't you scared you'd hurt me?
Terrified. But as soon as I could feel you breathing, I knew you were still alive, albeit unconscious. In that moment, I had another opportunity to turn things on Fairclough.
So you pretended to give up?
Yes.
And then when things really fell apart, you offered the sword to Fairclough?
Of course, he told me some sob story about me killing his brother, but I don't know if that's true or not. What I think is that Fairclough heard about me and started tracking me down. The rumor that some mystical sword existed is enough that people would want to get their hands on it any way they could.
Speaking of which, I'd love to know how you gave him the sword. That was some trick if ever I saw one.
It wasn't a trick. Fairclough really did have the sword in his possession.
You're kidding.
Nope. When I was unable to give it to you earlier on, I had to wonder why I hadn't been successful. I couldn't really figure it out, but then Fairclough, of all people, clarified things for me.
How?
He told me that the reason I hadn't been successful in giving it to you was because deep down I still knew I needed it. There was still evil to battle here in the maze, and I couldn't do it without the sword.
But you still had to battle Fairclough. So how could you give it up when you did?
Because I knew at that point I had something even more powerful than the sword to defeat Fairclough.
And what was that?
Faith.
Faith? That's going pretty damn far in such a little thing.
Is it? I think you're right. Faith is such a little thing that most people take it for granted in their daily lives. They get to it when they get to it. Marginalized.
You turning religious on me now, Anya?
My point is this. Since most people marginalize their faith in God, the universe, Mother Nature, they're never really prepared to have it tested. And when those tests come, most people fail them.
You've never had a crisis of faith, then? I find that hard to believe.
My entire life has been a crisis of faith. From the time I was a little girl, I've always wanted to know what the deal was with all the bullshit in my life. Why me? What did I do to warrant all this? Was I an evil person in a former life, and this is my punishment? What?
So what did you do?
I never stopped believing in the power of good.
That's it?
There you go again. Don't minimize it. Because, if anything, it's bigger than everything we know.
Certainly was this time.
Every time. No matter how down we get, no matter how depressed or overwhelmed we feel, if we simply accept that the universe is a balance, then we know that it will correct itself. And if we can help it correct itself, then we owe it to the universe to do just that.
You're an amazing woman.
No, I'm really not. I'm just trying to figure out life. Sometimes I feel like I might have an idea what it's all about, but then something else happens and it ruins all my theories.
Then why bother trying to understand it?
Because that's what I'm supposed to be doing. That's what my purpose in this life is.
Not to battle evil? I think some might disagree with you on that one.
Battling evil comes with the territory. You can't quest for the purpose of life without encountering evil attempting to manipulate things to its own end. Anyone questing for answers will always run into evil. It's unavoidable.
Which explains why so few people ever do search for the truth.
Exactly. I've just been lucky enough to find some answers along the way.
Kessel grabbed her in his arms.
I like to think that maybe I've been pretty lucky too this time out.
You think?
I do. Did the Earth just move for you too?
You're good, Kessel, but I don't think anyone's that good.
Come on.
They ran up the corridor beyond the examination room. Green arrows pointed the way, and Anya was relieved that Fairclough had at least had the good sense to show people how to exit.
You know explosives. How much time do we have?
Probably not enough.
They reached a stairwell, and Anya pushed through the door. The lower portion of the staircase came away from the wall and fell back into the flames, licking their way up from the bottom. They reached the second to the last flight of stairs.
We're almost there!
When they reached the top of the stairs, Kessel slammed into the exit door, forcing it open. They fell onto the grass as the cool evening air swept over them. The door behind them slowly closed itself.
Anya!
Yes?
We did it.
Thanks to you.
And you.
For the longest time, Kessel and Anya just lay there and held each other. Dawn broke over Fairclough's property. A delicate red-orange sky spilled along the line of oaks that stretched toward the horizon and the Berkshire Mountains in the distance. Anya shivered in the fall early morning air and turned over. She nudged Kessel awake.
How are you feeling?
Like someone used the inside of my mouth and lungs to line a camel tent. But I'm alive.
We're both alive. And we've got each other to thank for that.
Anya playfully punched Kessel on the arm.
So thanks.
I get a punch in the arm for saving your life? Something's wrong when you don't even get a kiss from the princess you saved from the dragon. Sheesh!
Tell you what, Prince Charming. When you get a shower and a shave, I'll get you that kiss.
Sounds like a fair trade.
Kessel rolled over and got to his feet. Anya watched him as he moved.
You sure you're okay?
You know, I actually feel pretty good.
Anya rose and walked back toward the stairwell entryway, a small shed that looked like something you'd normally find on any large property. But when she reached out to touch the door handle, she jerked her hand back.
Hot.
The whole place is probably melted. No sense going back down there anyway.
Anya looked around at the manicured landscape.
This is surreal. No sign whatsoever of the destruction.
It was all underground. About the only thing that would have been visible would be the smoke, and since the darkness would have concealed that, no one might even know this happened.
So what now?
I go call the FBI and get them out of here pronto. And then once I turn this over to them, I'm gonna get a room with a shower somewhere close by.
You think there's any chance the Bureau will comp me a room at that same hotel?
Gee, I'm not sure. I don't know if the bean counters will cough up another room. Budget cuts and all that.
So, what you're saying is if I want a shower, I'll have to suck it up and share a room?
It's a distinct possibility. I mean, I hate to disappoint you, but it's probably the reality of the situation.
I think you're using your authority to influence the outcome of this situation.
Are you claiming I'm abusing my position?
Well, you're not abusing any position just yet. But if you clean up real good, you might just get a chance to try out a few of them.
You know, that's just about the best thing I've heard in a really long time.
It took the FBI several hours to mobilize forces from the Boston, Worcester, and even the Albany offices. By the time they arrived, the day was half gone, and Anya and Kessel were nearly starving to death. The FBI had immediately gotten Kessel medical attention, and he'd been patched up on site by a mobile medical facility that they normally only rolled out in times of mass casualty incidents. When he'd emerged from the van, Kessel already looked about 100% better than he had earlier. Still far from perfect, but the on-site doctor hadn't insisted on Kessel going to a hospital. The question now was whether he was going to be able to go back to work with the Bureau or not. The doctors would still need time to determine if he had any lasting effects from the brain surgery he'd undergone. And then there were some concerns about his mental state as well, given that he'd been subjected to such trauma. Kessel characteristically wrote off the PTSD concerns.
You know,
I went on some really bad missions in Afghanistan. On one of them, we lost half our team. We got hunted and shot at for days while we waited for choppers to scream in and grab us. And after all that, they subjected us to these interviews with a psychologist. You know what? The shrink scored higher as mentally troubled than we did.
After settling in at a bed and breakfast in western Massachusetts, Anya was finally halfway to feeling human again. She and Kessel had flipped for the shower, and Kessel had won. He'd gone first and shaved the rest of his hair off his scalp. It wasn't normally a look Anya thought she'd go for, but seeing his gleaming dome under the fresh bandages later when he'd dressed, she had to admit he looked good. Damned good. After his shower, Kessel had even felt rejuvenated enough to go find a place for them to eat.
A town like this has got to have a cute little bistro where we can enjoy a bottle of wine and a meal together.
Anya relished being alone in the shower, feeling the spray of hot water and the joy of perfumed soaps. As Anya soaped, rinsed, and relathered, she could scarcely believe that a few hours earlier, she'd been trapped in that hellish prison underground. She grabbed the fluffy terry cloth towel hanging on the rack, wrapped it around herself, and then stepped out onto the thick bathroom rug. The bed and breakfast wasn't large, but it was luxurious, and all of it paid for by the Bureau. Kessel's handler had given him his credit card and told him to go wild. Anya thought that was the least they could do for Kessel after everything he'd endured through the course of his 2-year assignment. There was no way to recover the bodies left behind in the maze, however. Short of excavating the entire facility, they would have to stay where they were. Most likely, they'd been incinerated anyway. As one of the agents said, with the heat as strong as it was, everything would have melted and fell in on itself. Anya shrugged, no longer her concern. Her more immediate concern was what to wear tonight to dinner. She'd asked the B&B owner if she had an outfit she might borrow to change into after her shower. Anya planned to go shopping in town for something of her own to wear. To her surprise, the owner had outfitted Anya with a cashmere turtleneck in heather gray, a pair of black slacks, and a pair of black heels. Simple, but elegant. Anya slid into the new bra and panties that one of the female FBI agents had gotten for her. They weren't her usual style, but the white lace looked good on her. And while Anya wasn't a huge fan of boy shorts, she had to admit they were comfortable enough. As soon as she'd pulled on the rest of her clothes, she checked herself over in the mirror.
Not bad, Creed.
Anya sat on the bed and allowed her eyes to close for a moment. Just to lay there without any concerns whatsoever. It was heavenly. But she had to be ready. Anya rolled off the bed. She wondered if maybe Kessel could be convinced to have dinner here instead. And then afterward, they could pass out and sleep for about 100 years.
Yes, that would work.
In the bathroom, Anya switched on the blow dryer.
Was that the door?
Kessel?
Anya turned toward the door. A man stood there, pointing a pistol at her. Even with a wig on, Anya could tell it was Fairclough.
You don't know when to quit, do you?
You betrayed me.
Well, turn around is fair play, Fairclough. I let you think you were calling all the shots, just like you'd been doing the entire time I was trapped in that damned maze of yours.
I should have killed you when I had the chance.
But you didn't. And look what that mistake cost you. Pretty much everything, near as I can figure it.
Shut up! Look at you standing there, as if you don't have a care in the world.
Well, actually, I don't. Except maybe for the fact that there's a gun pointed at my chest.
And I intend to use it to kill you for what you've done to me and my family.
You know, I've been meaning to ask you about that. Want to know what I think? That we never did meet before. That you never really were around me or I ever killed your brother. I think you were after the sword the entire time. That maybe you heard about the sword and decided that it might just be the key to giving you incredible power or granting you immortality or something like that. Do you really believe that if you kill me, you can finally wield the sword?
Well, perhaps you'll never find out what the truth is, Anya, because it'll be too late when you're dead.
Behind Fairclough, the door opened and Kessel walked in, immediately realizing what was happening. He dove and tackled Fairclough.
Kessel, no! Your head!
The pistol dropped to the floor. Anya went for it, but Fairclough kicked it away from her. Kessel got him on the ground and then drove three punches into the old man's face, shattering his nose. But Fairclough wasn't done. He pulled out a knife and slashed it across Kessel's belly, drawing blood. Kessel fell off him, clutching at his stomach. And then Fairclough dove for the pistol. His hand wrapped around it, and he came up, already aiming at Kessel's head.
Fairclough!
He turned. The sword plunged into Fairclough's chest and pinned him to the opposite wall. Anya stood there as Fairclough looked down at the blade jutting out of his chest.
You wanted the sword so badly? Now you've got it.
Kessel got to his feet. Anya rushed over.
Are you all right?
Cut wasn't deep, but it hurts.
I meant your head.
I think we're gonna need a new room, huh?
The mansion was palatial even by the most demanding standards. Indeed, had its owner been forthcoming and open, monarchs and presidents might have enjoyed the hospitality within it. But the mansion was more like a secluded fortress. Rue paced the floor expectantly. His phone hadn't rung in more than 24 hours, and the person who should have been calling him had missed his most recent check-in time. His butler entered the drawing room, passing by the elaborate jewel-encrusted artifacts that Rue had spent much of his elongated existence collecting and hoarding. Rue turned. He liked the irony of a Frenchman keeping an English butler.
Sir?
What is it?
Telephone call, sir.
From Fairclough?
I'm afraid not, sir. Will you take it in here or outside?
In here.
Rue walked to the massive oak desk in one corner near the fireplace and sat in the well-worn leather chair. He leaned back and waited.
Yes?
It's Garin.
And what the devil do you want?
I just thought you'd be interested in a little information that I came across.
And what is that?
Seems like there was a rather massive fire at an underground facility in Massachusetts yesterday. Some sort of maze that imploded on itself. But that's not the most unusual thing. Want to know what is?
Yes.
Seems the man who owned it, a man by the name of Fairclough, turned up dead yesterday afternoon at a small bed and breakfast a few miles away from this inferno. Can you imagine? I mean, what are the chances of that happening?
I don't follow you, Garin. If you've got a point to make, I wish you would do so. I'm quite busy here.
Busy waiting for a phone call that you're never going to get. Imagine how Anya would feel if she knew about your connection to Fairclough. I think she'd be upset, don't you?
She need never know about it.
You still want it, don't you? After all this time, you still want that sword. Even though it's hers, you want it. And this man Fairclough was supposed to find a way to get it for you, wasn't he?
You really shouldn't make accusations you can't prove.
You're right, I can't prove it. But I don't really need to either, do I? Because a few words in Anya's ear will be all it takes for her to figure out exactly who was behind this. I don't imagine she'll be all that thrilled with you once she hears of it.
You're not intimidating me, Garin. You have skeletons of your own, and plenty I could quid pro quo you with. So, while I appreciate you calling to gloat over your assumptions, I really must bid you adieu.
Before you do, just don't forget what I've said. Bye now.
Sitting in his chair, Rue turned and stared out the window that overlooked his grounds. And for a long time, he just sat there, planning.
Rogue Angel Labyrinth is a graphic audio production. Rogue Angel trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2012, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Keegan, Michael John Casey, Christopher Grayville, Thomas Penny, Joe Brack, Jeff Allen, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Alexander Strain, and Tracy Oliveira. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for Lilith St. Crow's Dante Valentine series and Elizabeth Moon's Vada's War, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Warded man stalks the night, slaying demons with the newly discovered wards of power. But now, a new threat is rising. An old friend, now a bitter enemy. And he has in his possession a weapon that could unite all humanity, or tear it to pieces. The Desert Spear. Witness the rise of Amon Jardir in the Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear. Available now in graphic audio.
Now we can invade the Greenlands.
Kiss! Kiss, my darling. Come inside.
I remember some things. Others, not so much. And some things I only remember too late.
Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crow's
Jill Kismet.
I'm for sale, Pericles. Bid high.
Book 6.
Angel Town.
Go to Hyperion. You can be our avenging hand.
What do you remember?
Saul, is he all right?
Kiss!
I'm afraid either way, Davy.
My children, now is the hour of our glory.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.